Good morning. It is Sunday, August 19th, and you are listening to In the Wheelhouse. ITW is a weekly podcast on the Chicago Cubs and other ancillary topics. I'm Tom Hockney.
And I'm Leo Fontana. This week on ITW, conflict abounds between the Marlins and the Braves on the East Coast and the Giants and the Dodgers in the West. The St. Louis Cardinals get a jolt of energy from their new manager, Mike Shildt. Ramon Laureano of the Oakland A's makes an amazing play. We talk about David Bodie's magical moment, along with all the other news from Chicago's north side. Tom, how are you doing this fine Sunday morning?
I'm about 86% today.
Oh, good, good. You're doing all right. You know, I'm right there with you. I'm playing tennis again. You know, there's a tennis court, like, right in front of my house in the park here, and I'm starting to play with my neighbors. I'm playing doubles because I'm too old and fat to cover the whole court playing singles. But, you know, I'm really liking it. And I went out yesterday. I didn't tell my wife, but I went out yesterday and bought a $100 racket.
Whoa.
So, you know, but I'm playing well, and it's a lot of fun, and it's good exercise. So,
yeah, I'm playing triples myself. So, so I grew up in a household where I had a brother that was a really good tennis player. Not Joe Side good,
yeah.
but pretty good in his own right. And but he also had a little bit of a temper on him. And so one time he challenged me and a friend of mine. So he was singles and we were doubles against him. And let's just say he broke his racket in basically I just stood at the net and just knocked every ball down. And he was quite frustrated because he was really, really good. He had a hell of a serve.
Well, it's a lot of fun. And what I'm trying to deal with, because tennis fucks with you mentally.
Yeah.
You know, when you get out there and you get down on yourself when you make a bad shot or
right.
when you play doubles, you worry about letting your opponent down. But you just got to keep going forward and put all that crap behind you. So I'm just trying to focus on that. But let's get on to why we are here, and that is baseball. And let's begin with Ronald Acuña.
Junior.
Yeah, Ronald Acuña Jr., very sorry, an excellent rookie for the Atlanta Braves.
A great young player.
Yeah, and he pays the price for being good or for being great. And he hit a leadoff home run in three straight games against the Florida Marlins or the Miami Marlins. And the Marlins pitcher, Jose Ureña, decided he'd had enough. And he drills him in the arm, which is bullshit.
You're 100% right. So Acuña actually hit home runs in five straight games. No, not leadoff home runs.
But he homered
in five straight games. And what Ureña did was absolutely Bush League.
Yeah.
And only because it was so obvious. It would be one thing if it was close or if it was in the fourth inning or something like that. But to start the game like that, I just question whether the six-day suspension was enough, frankly.
Same with me. I think it should have been a lot more. And you think about this in terms of here's a player who's on the cusp of doing something extraordinary.
Right.
And you as a pitcher are basically making sure that he can't do that. And I think that's terrible.
Yep.
That is terrible. Yep. You got to let people be who they are. Get them out.
Not just that. It's just poor sports. Really what it is, it's like in football, the chop block. That's what that's like. You're going outside the lines of baseball to try to impact the outcome. And it's just, you know what? Here's the thought, Jose. Why don't you try to strike the guy out, throw a ball past him or something?
Well, you know what's messed up, too, is that pitch that he hit him with was the hardest pitch he'd thrown all year. Try to throw that over the plate.
Right. But that says even more about how disturbing this is, that you actually dialed it up to hurt this guy. It just was disgusting. Some people will say that this is part of baseball and this just is what it is. This was over the top. First of all, I'm all for the chin music in baseball. I think it's an effective strategy. However, this was over the top.
Yeah.
This was beyond the pale. And I think, you know, like you said, you make the case that maybe, let's put it this way. Acuña, who's already on the DL this year, had he gone on the DL, I would have thought that for as long as he would be on the DL, that's how long Jose would not be allowed to pitch. That's how severe I would, if I ran baseball, that's how I would have handled that.
Well, so, I think you'd make an excellent commissioner.
Yeah, right. Well, it's just funny that we were talking about Gates Brown homering in both ends of a doubleheader, and then Acuña did it to lead off two games in a doubleheader. That's just amazing. It really is. Young talent.
And we're gonna touch on something else that happened in both ends of a doubleheader later on. But I want to go right to the St. Louis Cardinals, who are relevant again. And we've been reading an article, a great article from Benjamin Hodgman of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It basically is, what if I told you in April that the Cardinals would be in the situation that they are in with Fowler on the DL and everybody's terrible.
Fam.
Holland and Fam had been traded. Yep. And they were still, you know, 4.5 or 5 games out of first. You know, it's really amazing what they've done because, you know, 3 weeks ago, you and I had written this team off. You know?
Yeah, well, hats off to Benjamin Hodgman, because as I read that article, I felt like I was transferred back into the 1930s. He actually writes like the way they used to cover baseball back in the day. The only difference is the mention of the win above replacement part portion, which if you drop that down into the 1930s, those sports writers' heads would have exploded. But I think that, you know, he makes a strong case that the Cardinals are playing very, very well. There are some issues with that team, I think, and I don't. Let's put it this way: the more I see the Central roll out, the less likely I believe that the National League is going to win the World Series this year. I just don't think every team is flawed. Every team in the West is flawed. The best pure team maybe in the National League could be the Braves, and I just think they're too young, and I don't think they're going to do it this year.
They lack experience.
The Cubs have some glaring holes, which we're going to talk about, but so do the Cardinals, and so do the Brewers. The Brewers, if this is the Brewers' fade that we've seen the last couple of years, I think they need to make a change in their GM, and they need to take a long look at themselves as far as, you know, just how tepid their free agent
how tepid they were in terms of signing free agents and in terms of trading for help at the deadline. It was terrible.
Yeah, and I hope that's not the case, because it's good for the Central. It's good for the Cubs. It toughens up the Cubs as we make our run towards the playoffs. But I'm just underwhelmed by the Central Division.
I'm less underwhelmed. I think actually I think the teams are better than you think they are. I think the competition is tighter all across the league. I do think the American League teams are better. I mean, the great American League teams are better. But you know what? The National League only has to play one series against the American League to win the World Series, and anything can happen.
The team that's not going to make the playoffs, sadly, in the American League, which is Seattle, is looking like, is maybe better than any National League team. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, we'll see. But you know what's interesting is last night the Cardinals, who are playing the Brewers, passed them for that second wild card spot.
Yeah,
the Brewers have now been knocked out of that spot. I mean, you know, I the Cardinals have momentum. It's clear they're playing well, and they could even challenge the Cubs for first place. What are they? They're only 4.5 behind. So
at this point, if you told me that 2 weeks ago, I would have laughed at you. But it's definitely conceivable and plausible. So
moving on, Ramon Laureano of the Oakland A's. He made the throw of the year, and this happened a week ago Saturday, and I would have talked about it last Sunday had I been aware of it, but I sent you the link. You saw this play.
Okay, so we spoke about this in the after show last week.
Yeah.
Where I told you I thought it was hogwash that they're calling it the play of the week, and I'll let you know my reasons why. It was a tremendous throw by this young outfielder, but the fact of the matter is the runner was between second and third. I would hope you would have doubled him off at first.
But he made the throw from the warning track in left
doubt.
Center
field. It was a tremendous throw, but he was also running two steps towards first base. It wasn't like he was throwing against his body. I just think I think, to me, that was not the play of the year. Elmora has made a couple plays from a catching standpoint that were superior to that. And to me, yeah, it was a great throw, but the guy was almost at third base. I would hope that you would throw him out at first. You had plenty of time to throw him out at first base.
Well, he had plenty of time. I mean, the ball was in the left center field gap, and he had to range all the way over. I mean, it was a really good catch, and I could see where the runner thought that would get down, he wouldn't stop running.
It was a Clemente-like throw. I give him credit. It was a tremendous throw, but again, all the cards were in his favor. As far as he was running towards first base when he made the throw, where he, and the runner had to get back past, well past second base. So I don't know. I just
And the fact, though, I mean, what's amazing about it is he makes the throw from the left center field warning track on the fly to first base. That's what was amazing about it.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, if you remember 2 years ago, I think Puig had two throws like that in the same season. They were double plays, but they were idiots trying to go from first to third, and he threw just absolute peas to the third baseman to throw him.
He has an exceptional arm. Yeah, he made a throw from the warning track and right to throw somebody out at third. So he has a cannon or a thunderbolt.
He does. Schwarber has a cannon too, by the way.
He does. But, he does.
So there was a great article by the always able Ken Rosenthal.
Yeah, in the Athletic.
On the Athletic, a great publication on Dusty Baker, and we've touched on Dusty Baker over the years as we've done our podcast, but I don't think we've ever touched on him like we're about to touch on him. So why don't you kick it off?
Yeah, no. Well, the article, and if you don't subscribe to the Athletic, you really ought to think about it because you're getting some tremendous writing, you're getting tremendous access to to whatever sport you like the most. Right. But in this case, Ken Rosenthal sits down with Dusty Baker and does a really long interview. And he talks about Dusty Baker, how he's feeling now that he's been fired by the Washington Nationals, and how he feels about the state of the game today and collusion and all these other things. And, Dusty is a complicated individual. And, he managed here in Chicago. He was run out of town, blamed for a lot of problems with the Cubs. I think in many ways he was unfairly blamed, but I also think that he doesn't necessarily see some of the issues that are right in front of him. And I also think, too, the biggest problem with Dusty is that he's unlucky. He has been very, very unlucky,
So that's where I disagree with you. I think you make your own luck. Sparky Anderson would say that for a manager that managed for 22 seasons and in 10 of those seasons he won 90 or more games, that's beyond being unlucky that you didn't win the World Series, buddy. There was a couple times that you
there
were
may
on
be
the
something,
verge.
And I'm
going to make you that case exactly what that is, and that is he cannot and has not and will not ever be able to handle pitching staffs. He's had problems his entire career. For a man who learned to manage at the knee of the great Roger Craig, one of the greatest pitching coaches that ever lived. If you go back and look at Roger Craig's record as a pitching coach before he became the manager of the Giants in the late 80s, where he had a lot of success, by the way, he was a tremendous baseball for Dusty. The problem that I had with the article is that he was half right and half wrong. After a while, I don't believe any of the racism stuff that he talks about. And the reason is because he benefited from that same racism.
He did. He admits it, too.
He got his job because of those comments that Al Campanis of the Dodgers made in the late 80s. He benefited from those same comments. Right. That's not it wasn't racism why you got fired, Dusty. The reason why you got fired is because in two of the instances, you inherited great teams. His San Francisco Giants, his very first year, he won 103 games.
Yeah. And didn't make the playoffs.
He lost the Atlanta Braves 104 games. Yeah, I know. So, and that's kind of a travesty unto itself. He's kind of an excuse machine if you kind of go through the whole thing. The Cubs, every single season, it was worse than the year before.
And
he had an able team. I mean, he had Mark Pryor, he had Kerry Wood, and he had Matt Clement. He had a decent pitching staff when he inherited that Cubs team. And what did he do? He ran it into the ground is what he did from my perspective. Pryor throwing 160 pitches in games. That was insane. The problem with you, Dusty, is you just – if you had a Roger Craig, a great pitching coach that you let run the show, kind of like they did with the Bears in 85, as far as having, a head coach and a defensive head coach.
Right.
Then you might have had a different result, because the reality is you could not handle pitchers. Your hunches were terrible. So while you make the case that, Jason Worth is missed in the Washington
clubhouse, right?
You're missed. You were a player's coach. Specifically, you were a veterans player's coach. You weren't so good with the younger players. You were really good with the veterans, but that's not enough to win World Series. He was 23-32 in the postseason. That's terrible. That's absolutely terrible. When you get to the postseason, this is Sparky 101. You're there for one reason and one reason only: to win. And if you go back and you look at his last series, even in Cincinnati, which to me the Cincinnati managerial thing was the biggest great job that Dusty did.
Yeah, yeah.
He took a 74 win team to winning 97 games 4 or 5 years later in that market in Cincinnati. That's remarkable.
Yeah.
That's, you know, maybe the Reds shouldn't have fired him at the end of the 2013 season. I don't know. All I know is that he's beyond unlucky to me. He's a very good manager. He's a good players manager. He's a great baseball mind, but he cannot handle pitching staffs. It has nothing to do with his color of his skin. I just think there's he's not the only guy that's been in this predicament. There's been plenty of other managers that could not get it across the goal line. There's been plenty of NFL coaches. If you go back to the guy that used to coach the Houston Oilers every single year, Bum Phillips. He couldn't win the Super Bowl. He had these great teams, and he was a great coach. So that's the part that I struggle with this article, is that he tends to kind of blame. He does not accept responsibility.
No, he does not. He does not accept responsibility. And I think that on the one hand, a black man living in America certainly has the right to say that there is racism, you know,
no doubt,
you know, and
because there is,
because there is racism.
There is times when that is appropriate. I don't think it's appropriate here, but I think that there are plenty of times.
And I think there's no question that he and others, other black men, have been hurt by racism in baseball. But he also makes the point that the only chances that black or minority managers get is when the teams are terrible, you know, that you inherit, you get hired to and the team is terrible, and that's why they take a chance on a minority manager.
And there's probably some truth to that.
There is some truth to that, but I think it's not entirely true, because Cito Gaston got a very good Blue Jays team, and there have been instances when minority managers have had good teams too. But
whoa. Cito Gaston inherited a team in Toronto that was underperforming, that he won two World Series.
Right, but they were a good team to begin with.
They had Dave Steve. Yeah. They had a very good pitching staff. So that was before Morris was on the team. There used to be a line that they would say is, what do you have when you have O.J. Simpson, Dusty Baker, and the architect of the old park in San Francisco all together in the same room?
A butcher, a baker, and a candlestick maker. All right. So, but anyway, all right, let's move on. The ugliest rivalry in the National League heated up this week when Yasiel Puig and Nick Hundley, they have a little trouble playing nice. So, Puig fouls off a pitch, and he throws his bat in the air and just grabs it in sort of this, I don't know, act of rage or whatever, that he didn't hit the pitch out of the ballpark. And Hundley said something to him, and whatever he said to him, Puig took issue, and they started facing off against each other. Then Puig pushes Hundley, and one thing leads to another. The bench is clear. Puig gets thrown out. He gets suspended for 2 days. Hundley gets thrown out. This was really, really ugly, and I would have given anything to know what Hundley said to Puig to set him off. You know.
Yeah. Well, Puig is a meathead. He always has been. I've always thought the guy was a little bit unglued. Tremendous talent, but it's just, you know, time and time again, you have done the wrong thing, and it just seems as though when push comes to shove, you know, you pop a rivet. In that large brain case that's containing that very small brain of yours. And so at some point Puig's going to take a bat to somebody. That's the kind of rage this guy's got. And tremendous talent, but I just think he's just slightly unglued as a human being.
He certainly demonstrates a lack of maturity. And there's no question about that. And that was a big problem with him early on in his career. He wasn't a good teammate. I remember a game at Wrigley Field where the center fielder was camped under a ball, ready to catch a fly ball, and Puig runs from right field in front of him and catches the ball. You know what I mean? And it was just kind of a dick move. I don't know. Why would you do that? You know,
he's He's got such talent. That's the amazing thing. And he's shown such over the years, such poor plate discipline. But I think he's gotten frustrated many, many different times. And this whole bat flipping thing, this whole Jose Bautista of throwing these bats up, even we're going to talk about David Bote. Bote did it last Sunday. I'm not a huge fan of it. I don't like that kind of stuff. I come from the old school, like Jim Brown would score a touchdown. He would hand the ball to the referee, just like Peyton did. I don't like this grandstanding. I'm old school like that. I don't like it in baseball at all. I don't like when pitchers do it. I don't like when hitters do it. And Puig, he's just a musclehead. I mean, there's just no other way of saying it. He's just, you know, he's not going to write the next great American novel. I can tell you that right now.
Well, he has one of the greatest baseball bodies anybody's ever had, I'll tell you that. And he's got talent like you wouldn't believe. And why he isn't better as a player, I can't understand. But
yeah, I think he's built like a football player myself. I subscribe to Sparky Anderson that, you know, he constantly was on the late, great Lance – or not late, the great – catcher Lance Parrish for being too much of a into bodybuilding because he said has no place in baseball. Sparky's been proven slightly wrong on that front.
Yeah, he
has. Baseball players should not look like football players, and Puig looks like a football player.
He does. All right, so let's move on. The New York Yankees are 72-46. That was when I wrote this. That's a .620 winning percentage, and they were 10.5 games behind the Red Sox. That is just astonishing. The Red Sox are just running away with it. You know?
They are. They're having the Yankees are actually 77-46 now. So, they've won five more games since you wrote this. And you're right that the Boston is having a season for the ages. I recently went and compared their year to my 84 Tigers, which I always do. They're seven games ahead of that team, and that team came out of the gates at 35-5.
Wow.
Boston has a slight outside chance to beat the Seattle or to match the Seattle record for most wins in a season. I tend to think that that's not going to happen only because if Boston's smart, and I think that they are,
they'll pump the brakes.
They have to start resting some of those players. Yeah. They have such a lead. They have a 50-game lead over the last-place Baltimore team.
Yeah, and this is going to be the greatest margin between first place and last place in history. You know?
Well, and by the way, Baltimore has the chance to – so the all-time most losses is the 62 Mets with 120. The 2003 Tigers lost 119.
Oh.
And I think Baltimore – is going to be over 115. Whether they get to 120, I'm not exactly sure.
That's a terrible season.
Yeah. Part of it is they've gotten rid of a lot of their players, too. It's a complicated situation. I love Buck Showalter. I always have. He's a tough-nosed, old-school manager. But that's really a terrible team. Hopefully they kind of rebound through all the prospects that they've acquired. You know, I thought that was going to happen with the White Sox. It hasn't happened. I'm not so sure it's going to happen for the White Sox based on the way that they're playing. And so hopefully Baltimore has a better fate because, quite frankly, the White Sox have only won eight more games than them.
Yeah,
that's how bad they are. And they should start to turn it around based on what they've acquired in prospects over the last four seasons.
I want to skip ahead, and I want to go right to the Oakland A's, who last night got into a tie. They beat the Astros, and they are now tied for first with the world champion Houston Astros in the American League West. The Astros are reeling. The A's are streaking. And what I love about this A's team is their pitching staff. They have Brett Anderson, Trevor Cahill, and Edwin Jackson, all of them former castoffs from the Chicago Cubs, and all of them are contributing to the A starting rotation. I think I was going to say they need to pick up Jason Hamill on waivers and then maybe sign John Lackey, you know, to finish the season. That would be something.
Yeah, that would be something. I think the most intriguing and interesting part of it is the resurgence of Edwin Jackson.
Oh, absolutely.
Edwin Jackson, when I first saw him pitch, I was like, well, we've got the second coming of Bob Gibson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until you saw the results, which were not so good. They were not Bob Gibson-like at all. But he pitched and looked. He had that kind of look about him. If I was a hitter, I'd be like, well, you better watch out. This guy could hurt you. He's very formidable up there.
He had great stuff, but he never could put it together with the Cubs. He was awful.
Yeah, when you break down the statistics a little more, they still favor the Astros to winning that division. And to me, I think the Astros, I wouldn't be surprised if they knocked off the Red Sox, because as good as that Seattle team that won 119 games, they were summarily dismissed in the playoffs. Hopefully that does not happen to the Red Sox, but it could.
But it could. That wouldn't bother me too much.
I know it wouldn't bother you, but it wouldn't surprise me, only because of how, you know, basically they are running through this league like room temperature mayonnaise through my colon.
Yeah.
And so when that kind of thing happens, they start believing the hype and they start believing the press that's being written about them. And I think
bad things happen.
Sparky used to say, you want to be in the weeds chasing.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the ones that they're chasing. And right now the Red Sox are the team that everybody's chasing. I think you bring up a very good point about the Oakland A's. The Oakland A's are having an extraordinary year, but they are eclipsing a fine year out of the Mariner ball squad. Both of these teams were not expected to make the playoffs this year.
Right.
Let's be honest.
They weren't expected to compete at all.
At all.
Yeah.
And so the fact that Seattle, which has had some challenges, they recently had to put King Felix into the bullpen, yeah, which is – that's a whole other story. But I think, you know, Oakland is doing it the right way. You know, you got to give that organization credit. They've done a tremendous job with analytics. They've done more with less than I can think of almost any other team. In the National League, the team that reminds me of that is the Pittsburgh team.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh is hanging around, and when you look at them, you're like, how and why are you hanging around? I don't get it.
I don't – yeah.
So –
well, and nobody thought – I mean, this A's team began the season with the lowest payroll in baseball. Nobody thought they had a chance to compete for a playoff spot, and here they are tied for first. I love it. It's why this is such a great sport. All right, let's move on and talk about the Chicago Cubs. Mm-hmm. Last Sunday night, David Bodie had the most dramatic moment certainly this season and maybe that I've ever seen. You know, out of a Cubs.
We are world champions now. Don't forget about that.
Regular season win. You know, regular season win. But he hits a walk-off grand slam home run.
Grand slam.
With two outs and two strikes in the ninth inning.
Yep.
And they're down 3-0. Now, this has happened only one other time in the history of baseball where a team has been down 3-0 in the bottom of the ninth and a player hits a grand slam to win it. And I went to bed. I thought the Cubs were sunk. I wake up the next morning. I look at my phone. My brother-in-law on the West Coast is like, I can't believe what I just saw. You know, and I go to the MLB Network, and I'm like, I'm astonished. Incredible. Yeah. Incredible.
It was, and Wrigley was absolutely electrified at that moment. And
in a way that, you know, only Wrigley Field can be. That if you've ever been there and seen something crazy happen, it's just an amazing feeling, you know?
Yeah. And so that was, by the way, the Nationals, speaking of the Nationals again, they had back-to-back walk-offs again.
Yes,
so
they
very
did.
Next night,
the very next
the
night.
The Cardinals did it to them.
I know.
And so at that point, I made the comment, and I was starting to write some of the show notes for this week, is that the end of the Nationals?
Yeah.
But the reality is that they still have a chance. It's an outside chance to turn it around.
What are they six or seven out? Yeah, they're
seven games out as of this morning. They would need to catch fire. And the problem is they've got Philadelphia and Atlanta ahead of them. They're not going to get a wild card position, so they have to win the division.
Yeah.
It's not out of the question, but that kind of stuff is demoralizing.
It really is.
You know, you Bodie has been such a tremendous replacement for
Chris Bryant.
For Chris Bryant. And, you know, every time she sees Bodie now, she's like, you know, are they going to keep Chris Bryant?
Yeah, kind of funny. Your wife, is that what Gwen said?
Because he's done so well defensively, particularly at third base.
He's brilliant.
He's buying his own Kool-Aid as far as that barehanded play, because that came back to bite him yesterday. Even though that one hit was a tough hit, it's like, hey, David, use your glove, buddy. You can't field every ball with your hand.
But he's made seven or eight extraordinary plays.
No doubt. And so you raised the question with Bodie and Brian on the same team. Does that pose a problem for Addison Russell? I think it does, because Russell's having such a terrible year.
Yeah.
Russell is just – he's lost up there at the plate. I try to think positive with him. He still makes some fairly decent defensive plays, but the problem is, I don't know what you're going to get for the guy. What can we get a good pitcher for him? I'd trade him in as a heartbeat.
No, I know. Well, you trade him. He has no value right now as bad as
he's
playing.
Right.
So, I mean, you have to try to figure this out, but he's definitely the odd man out. I mean, Bodie has proven that he belongs up here. And it's an interesting story because he was languishing in the minor leagues, not doing very well, but they look at his analytics and they see that his exit velocity is among not only the highest in the minors, but the highest in all of baseball. So they make a little adjustment to his swing. They have him hit the ball in the air more, and suddenly, you know, he's turned into, he's turned into Greg Nettles. I don't know. It's just really, it's really amazing.
Right. He's the Cubs Comet.
He is. All right, so moving on, let's talk. Jose Quintana had kind of a bad start last week against the Brewers, but John Lester, who had been struggling, got his mojo back, and he pitched six innings of shutout ball against the Pirates. And by the way, the Cubs won two straight 1-0 games against the Pirates, which was remarkable in itself. But I think with Quintana struggling – because you look at him and, you know, Quintana's a fine pitcher. I don't think there's
He's a great pitcher.
I don't think there's anything wrong with him physically. I think they just have to figure out how he can use his stuff better. It's a minor problem. If they can fix it, I think he could be really good.
Yeah, Quintana suffers what a lot of starters suffer from, which is that he struggles to get out of the early innings.
Yeah.
If you turn on a game and it's the fourth or fifth inning and he's given up less than one or two runs, chances are he's going to win that start.
Yeah.
And so he's really two pitchers. He's the good Quintana and he's the bad Quintana. I'm not really concerned with him at all. But it was really great to see Lester pitch well again, and he pitched extremely well.
He really did. He did.
Last night, I was frustrated as hell because I realized they have to have Tyler Chatwood on the team. But part of me is like, just cut this guy. He cannot throw strikes. He's got the. Did you see that stat they threw up there last night?
I did not.
He has the highest walk ratio among seven pitchers in the last 100 years of the game.
Wow.
For guys that have that many starts in the season, he just can't throw strikes. I've seen this happen many times over my years of following baseball. Nice guy. He's trying. Yeah. You know, they're going to obviously try to put him so far back in the bullpen that his main job is to conduct the dancers when the Cubs hit a home run. But it's just, you know, Madden, I understand what you're doing. I understand what you were trying to do. I got to give Joe a lot of credit last night because he pulled him in the third and he yanked him.
He did.
Right
he
away.
Him. He saw
he
it.
He had to do it. Yeah. That game was still winnable. But you talk about the 1-0 games. Those were scary to me. And it's even scarier that in three games they've scored three runs. And so the Cubs' problems, as we've talked about, is that they've had problems with their starting pitching, which is well documented. And I think that if you comes back with any kind of a vengeance and we get Morrow back and we get Bryant, we're going to be just fine as a team. But we've had a problem all year scoring runs. I don't know why.
They've
got too much talent.
Well, it feels that way. I think the overall numbers tell a different story, but recently
actually they don't. As far as runners left on base, they lead the majors by 50 runners on base over every other team. Actually it's not true.
But they have the second or third highest batting average as a team in the majors.
They have one of the lowest home run rates. If you every stat you bring up, I'll bring a stat that to me is alarming about how, you know.
But their runners
it's either feast or famine. They either score 10 runs or they don't score any runs.
But their runners in scoring position, that low mark there, I think might be a question of some bad luck. I don't know, but I don't know. I think that could turn around is my hope anyway.
I do too.
All right. So moving on, let's see. One thing that was really encouraging, you know, because what's really funny is the Cubs have three games where all they score is a single run and they're 2-1. In those three games, they win two.
Thank God for Cole Hamels.
And a big part of that was the other night they tied a major league record and turned seven double plays behind Cole Hamels, which I thought was brilliant.
If you turn nine, nine is the most you could turn in a game, right?
Right.
With the extra innings, I guess. But in a regulation game, so yeah, that was remarkable. That's just blind stupid luck and an aberration. But really, the story is Cole Hamels has been a great acquisition.
How about that? Yeah. Theo Epstein really pulled off one of the great trades, I thought, you know, midseason trades in ever by acquiring that guy. Because nobody, he was on nobody else's radar. Everybody looked at him and said, we don't want him. He's terrible. He's washed up. Right. No, he's not washed up. He's going to be on the playoff roster, and the Cubs will ride him. They will ride him very far into the playoffs.
Correct. All right. He's John Lackey at age like 31 or 32.
All right. So we're running a little long here. I'd like to go straight into This Week in Baseball history, if that's all right with you.
Absolutely.
All right. So this week in baseball, August 15th, 1975, Earl Weaver is ejected in both ends of a doubleheader by Ron Luciano. So I don't know what the circumstances were. I tried to look around a little bit. I didn't see that. But I mean, that's just something that can only happen to Earl Weaver. And I think that was his last season managing in the majors. And I think he probably did it because he knew that Luciano was umpiring that day. And I think he probably planned it ahead of time. You know what I mean?
Well, that definitely was not his last season because you remember they brought him back in the late 80s for like a minute.
Yeah.
Luciano and Weaver had an unbelievable relationship. And so it wasn't always acrimonious. I'm pretty sure that they were friends at certain points.
Yeah.
But Luciano was like that. He was a very colorful umpire, but that's not what I would call a compliment. To me, an umpire should not be colorful. He should not be. It's one of the reasons why I despise Joe West. Yeah. You cannot insert yourself in the game. To me, an umpire should be, you know,
invisible,
vanilla. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. You shouldn't even notice that he's there. With Luciano, he basically a nice guy, a good guy. He died young, unfortunately. He inserted himself in the games. He took the bait from Weaver.
Yeah.
You know, part of what Weaver did was an act. You know, that he did that to rile up his team. And plus, you know, Earl Weaver, I think, was the last guy to smoke cigarettes in the runway up to the dugout. He was a great, great manager and a great character, and he was great for the game of baseball. And I loved Earl Weaver. Earl Weaver really taught other managers how to behave, including Joe Maddon, when they have exchanges with umpires.
No,
so.
He did. All right. So August 16th, 1920, this is very sad. Ray Chapman suffered a fractured skull when he was hit by a fastball thrown by Yankee right-hander Carl Mays. This is the only death that ever occurred on the field in a Major League Baseball game. He died that night of a head fracture, a fracture to the skull. And, you know, Mays, Carl Mays was a great pitcher, and he always complained that he never made the Hall of Fame because he killed Ray Chapman.
That's not the reason. I think we've talked about this previously. And Mays in the 1950s, you can go on YouTube and there's interviews with Carl Mays. Carl Mays didn't go into the Hall of Fame because his stats didn't bear out that he should go into the Hall of Fame.
He's borderline, I think. I'm not looking at him now, but if I recall, they're borderline. He was a very, very good pitcher. But he was
reason why he's not in the Hall of Fame.
He was a headhunter.
He was a headhunter, and that throw against Chapman was a headhunting.
Yeah, he did it.
Move.
It's
one of the tragedies in baseball. There's been a couple, in the history of the game, but very few of them have been inside the diamond. Usually they're on the outside, like the Roy Campanella thing, Lyman Bostock getting shot in the height of his career.
Right.
You know, baseball's chock full of tragedies like that. But that the Chapman is unique. It's interesting to me that it hasn't happened since because of how, particularly going back to the pre Tony Conigliaro day when they didn't have that flap on the batting helmet.
Right.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened. But now they've done a pretty good job. It's hard to do.
Yeah,
so.
It would be hard to do. Exactly. All right. So, and here's one you may remember. August 19th, 1982, Pasquale Perez. Remember him?
Yeah.
He missed his start for the Braves when he got lost on Interstate 285 trying to find Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. And he arrived to the game 10 minutes late. Now, what's hilarious about this is he's playing a home game. He gets lost in August. Okay.
Yep.
I mean, playing a home game because he can't get to the stadium. That's remarkable. How do you do that?
Well, the, Well, the most incredible thing is that this is a true story.
Yeah.
This isn't about some girlfriend or something, some drug issue. This actually happened.
Yeah.
I've read a couple of reports on this. He wasn't kidding. He just got confused. And he was the laughingstock of baseball for a few weeks after
that. He really was. I mean, can you imagine?
And the players used to rib him on the field about that, too.
Oh, yeah.
For a while after
oh,
that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how can you find first base? You can't even find this stadium.
I know. That was hilarious. I mean, can you imagine not being able to find your way to work? You know, it just kills me. All right. So the Rangers turned an odd triple play. I think this is worth mentioning. They were playing. I forget who they were playing, but the other team had the bases loaded. And what was remarkable about this particular triple play is they retired three runners, and not a single one of them was the hitter. They got
Correct.
The runner at third, they got the runner coming from second, and they got the runner coming from first, which is never, I don't know, that's very, very rare and very unusual.
It's only happened like two or three other times. And if you watch the video, there's a video which is great about YouTube, where they play the home and the away announcers of the same play. And both announcers were like, did that just happen? What is that? what kind of play is that?
Yeah, because they had to figure it out. Because what was funny is, the ball is hit very hard to the third baseman, who makes a diving stop. The ball bounces just before he fields it. So the runner at third thinks that he caught it on a fly and is going back to the bag. And then he reaches to try to tag him. The runner at third falls off the bag, and that's when he's tagged. So that's out number one.
That's the only reason why the triple play occurred, was because of the third base
the runner
running
third,
mistake.
Right. And then he steps on the bag to retire the runner coming from second, and throws to second to get the runner coming from first. So there was a very unusual play.
Who was also tagged. It could have been four outs.
Yes,
it
really could have been four outs. All right. So, all right. A great show again, Tom. Really great talking to you. I hope you have a great weekend, or finish out your Sunday doing some fun stuff. So anything else you want to add?
Good luck on the tennis courts this morning, and we'll talk next week.
One last thing real fast. If you have any comments or questions, send them to youareinthewheelhouse@gmail.com. Over and out.